fairly simple. They're both stabilized, kind of core multifamilies. On Chicago, you know, this is in the West Loop, kind of that Randall Street restaurant row. So, yeah.
Yeah, you know, you're by, like, Girl on the Go, Nashaval, all that stuff. Yeah, it's a good spot.
Exactly, exactly. So, center of gravity, you know, the kind of the punchline then on this asset is it is a little bit older, developed in 2006 by PGIM. But, you know, kind of had that institutional ownership for many years. They put a lot of money in 2019 into it to renovate it. So you have a, you know, very quality asset that's in a great location, but, you know, you're at about a 25-30% discount on your monthly rent. So call it $350 a foot versus, you know, the newer product that's delivered, you know, since kind of 2020, you know, is more like a $450 a foot. So, you know, it's targeting that renter that is looking for, you know, doesn't necessarily want to put their whole paycheck to the rent, but you're getting, you know, very close to the same amenity package unit offering as the newer building in the same location. So,
okay. I see Michael joined us, Greg, so I don't know if Dana, Donica, Greg, you've met Michael, but Michael's been on our team a little over a year now, and I think he's – we're trying to get a little more knowledge on the DST front, so if I get hit by a bus, somebody else can step in. So Michael's going to join us today. So thanks for dialing in, Michael.
Yeah, nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you, everybody.
And Greg, what's occupancy look like at the Chicago asset historically? Look like now it's in the low 90s. Has it been kind of pretty steady in that space even prior to your acquisition?
I would say when you, on an adjusted basis, and I'll explain that in a second, it's, you know, more like a 95 typical. You know, what PGIM did since 2019 was as units became available, you know, they would take them offline for a month or two and renovate them. And so when you look back historically at the occupancy, that's why you see it kind of in the lower 90s, but it's just because, you know, you have a handful of units that are intentionally offline. When you kind of remove those, it's, you know, been very well leased and occupied. So, like, kind of, as you know, it's in that permanent location, protected views of the river right by Ogilvie train station, right by our Hines Chicago office. You know, I think this was before Ameriprise signed, but, you know, our second DST is M, which is a multifamily deal that HGIT owns as well. But, you know, it's not competitive because that's really the newer product at $450 a rent. So, you know, we know the submarket very well, just kind of choosing to play it from a different angle with this asset.
And it looked like you just bought this a month ago. Can you talk a little bit about that process? I read the appraisal report and it indicated that maybe you were on the lower end of the bids, but all cash and worked with PGIM, and that allowed you to maybe get in at a better value. Any comments there?
Yep. No, that's, you know, that's exactly right. That's our favorite place to be in to win these deals at a good basis. So, yeah, you know, we were the most credible. We were all cash, and obviously, you know, Alfonso Monk, our, president of HGIT, came from PGIM, a lot of connectivity there. So, they were selling for redemptions, and so certainty won the bid at the end of the day.
Was it one of their closed-end funds? It didn't look like it was in their REIT.
It's not, definitely not. No, it was in PGIM's
Odyssey back. Fund.
I don't. I have it. I just don't have it offhand.
Okay, that's fine.
But it was.
I was just curious.
Yeah, it was in an institutional.
Okay. And then any, you mentioned PGIM had done a bunch of renovation work, and since 2019, are there any things you've already earmarked at Hines that you need to do at this asset, or is it kind of steady state for a period of time?
There are a couple things. There's not, you know, there's not a ton, but I know the elevators are, you know, still original, still working fine, but we need to do some more comprehensive work there. You know, there's some capital that we've already earmarked on for the HVAC systems as well as the roof. So, you know, nothing that's like, it's really just kind of continuing to keep the asset to our standards and, nothing that's, you know, needs to be done necessarily day one, but definitely just given the age capital that we, you know, want to continue investing in.
Okay. All right. Let's go over to Miami, and this one's been in H-shit for 4-ish years. So yeah, just a quick overview of kind of how this one's performed, why it makes sense kind of as a long-term hold for you all at Hines.
Sure. Yeah, we bought it in the summer of 2022. We went, you know, kind of going into the end of the cycle there. We went super core, which is really what you want to do, just given this asset did hold its value very well, you know, since 2022. It's in Coral Gables, which, you know, if when you think about Miami versus the rest of the Sun Belt, Miami just has a lot of barriers relative to the rest of the Sun Belt, given you have obviously the ocean to your east and the Everglades to your west, right? So, more protected. This asset really plays to Hines' strengths of kind of placemaking mixed use. So in addition to kind of the 495 units of multifamily, you have some pretty strong supporting retail, which is anchored by a Lifetime Living and a Trader Joe's grocery store, in addition to a couple of restaurants. But those drive a lot of traffic, really a prominent asset for this area. The residents get a complimentary membership to Lifetime when they rent here. It's quite a sight. You really have to see that Lifetime in person. It's very impressive. But and then next to this asset is the Shops at Merritt Park, a huge open-air shopping center. And then, yeah, a lot of folks want to be in Coral Gables, right? It's better schools. You have the Coral Gables mailing address, which people want. So a very difficult asset, I would say, to replicate right now. And kind of similar to Left Bank, you know, when we bid on this, they were trying to get around $450 million, and we were not close to that, and they awarded it to someone else, and they couldn't perform, and they had to drop out, and then it came back to us, you know, at a significantly lower price. It was below the developer's cost basis. So it was a, you know, similar story theme to some of the other assets that we've chased, but, you know, it has, I won't lie, you know, obviously during 2023, 2024, you did have other assets delivering coming online. That was kind of the theme of multifamily, right? Especially in these higher growth markets. So occupancy did dip a little bit. We did more or less maintain rents, just given the asset quality. And now that supply has all burned off, you know, we have kind of been between this 95-99% occupancy and have been pushing rents, continue to do so. This is also near the University of Miami. So it does have a, you know, fairly meaningful concentration of students who like to rent here as well. But, you know, it's been a very good performing core asset for the fund, and definitely see it as a longer term hold, which is why we combined it with Left Bank.
Okay. And from a valuation standpoint, it looks like it ticked down a little bit since purchase. Is that just a function of capital market assumptions moving a little bit? Not, doesn't sound like it's a performance related issue at the asset.
Yeah, that's right. Capital markets, you know, really anything you would have bought back then, you would have seen some expansion on exit caps and discount rates. And sorry, I can't hear you. There, you dropped.
It's all on you now, Michael.
Oh man, now we're in trouble. But yeah, I assume he might be trying to log back in, see if maybe that works.
I covered what I needed on cap rates. Could you talk a little bit about the non-multi tenants there? Like, what are we talking about from a leasing standpoint? I'd assume it's a newer asset, so there's some long-term leases in place, but maybe just talk a little bit about that Trader Joe's and Lifetime lease.
Yeah, let me pull that up. They're fairly long-term, so there's definitely there's no leasing to do anytime soon. Let me get those dates for you. Yeah, Lifetime goes through 2041, and then they have options that would take it another 20 years. Trader Joe's is through 2031 with another 20 years of options. So, you know, that's the vast majority of the square footage.
And then two restaurants, are they higher-end restaurants like we talked about with the Houston asset, or fast food? Any comments there?
Yeah, so Graziano's is more of like, I'm trying to compare it to something. It's a little casual. It has kind of both. It's like a Spanish market. It's almost like, oh, you know what? You know, like Italy in New York. Have you been there? Okay. It's similar to that. Just kind of with a Spanish vibe.
Okay.
Obviously much smaller. But that kind of level of casualness. And then Herba is a, higher end restaurant. And then there's the plastic surgeon that reportedly gets a lot of cross-selling with the Lifetime gym, I hear.
That's given the age?
I'm sorry?
Is there any renovation work that you earmarked, or given the age, I'd assume not?
No, nothing meaningful, but, you know, it's South Florida. Every couple of years you have to really maintain the painting, the waterproofing, things like that. So light touch-ups here or there, but nothing material.
Okay. And then I guess any comments on your insurance policy at Hines with H-Shit? It'll come up anytime we do some of these Miami-type assets. I know insurance costs have increased tremendously. That's just part of your large umbrella, but any like high-level comments about what you're thinking about broadly at Hines with when it comes to insurance rates and some of the increases you've seen there?
Yeah, no, they spiked up pretty big. They have been actually coming down a bit, normalizing. But what's nice for us is because all of these, we don't take out specific asset policies. They're all on the master policy,
yep,
which is then syndicated across the carriers. And so when you have a South Florida asset, because that risk is diversified, you get a little bit better of a insurance premium than taking out like a standalone policy with one insurance carrier. So we've actually been the beneficiary of, you know, having some lower rates on areas that are higher risk, just because the carriers, you know, they can offset it by saying, well, you also have, you know, an office asset in Minneapolis, for example, right? That obviously you're not going to see a hurricane, you know, or an earthquake. So that's what I'll say there.
Okay. All right. I think that covers off on the two assets at a high level. So thank you. Can you talk a little bit, the distribution amount caught my attention, Greg. I know these are core stabilized, so maybe that's the gist of it, but you're talking 70-ish basis points lower than what you've seen in your prior deals, 3.9. So is it just a function of the types of assets, and what have the conversations been like internally about having a distribution amount below 4% here with this deal?
Yeah, you know, as you see, because you're really one of the only people we give that profit tab to, that, you know, this is really our lowest profit ever. And so it's Gables is about 70-75% of the asset AUM of this offering. And, you know, just given that trophy status in Miami, that's where that appraisal cap rate shaking out at, which is kind of in line with what we see in NCREIF, for example. So, it's really just indicative of the quality of the assets, which is really obviously geared towards Gables. But, internally, yeah, I mean, it wasn't, we kind of, I remember I spoke to Sam in New York about it before we launched, and a handful of our other key partners, and, you know, obviously we are not increasing our profit because of this, and given it's reflective of the assets, and I think so far everyone is fine with that.
Okay. How about UPREIT for Park Place? Have you earmarked timing there? I know it's coming into its window, I believe, this month or last, right around now. So any update? I know we didn't syndicate it, but we tend to kind of walk through prior deals with Ares, and we'll do a similar thing with Hines once we start operating properties, just to say, hey, have they performed in line with our expectations. So any update on kind of Park Place timing and results?
You are right. The window opened up last month. We are still polishing our whole kind of UPREIT process and the documents associated with that. We're getting pretty close. So I think it's a Q1 event. It's February or March at this point. But there's no reason that we wouldn't UPREIT. So, just getting our ducks in a row there. You know, on the valuation, that's getting done now. Just it normally appraises in December. We'll obviously get that updated again in either February or March. But, you know, it's obviously going to be this one went in and we bought it in July of 2022, went in the DST in September of 2022. You know, it'll be down from where we bought it at. You know, it'll now when you look at NCREIF, for example, that is down 20% since that same time period. This is going to be down much less than that. So, you know, definitely kind of the master lease helped mitigate as well as just the asset, attributes of long WALT, credit tenancy, things like that. So, I don't have the final valuation yet, but, you know, it'll be down, but it'll be down less than, you know, the REITs NAV, for example.
Okay. No, that's helpful, caller. And I think I would have been concerned if that asset would have been up 10 or 20% if you told me that. So I have no concerns. If I would expect it to be down, and I think our advisors would as well, given how we position this product. So that makes total sense to me. And yeah, I think what we end up doing when we bring a new deal to committee, we usually say, hey, we've had an UPREIT occur since last time we spoke with you all. You know, kind of average investor returns were this. Does that make sense to us? Yes or no? And in this case, if you tell me it's down 10%, I think it'd be an easy thing we'd socialize with the group of, hey, if you syndicated property in July, August of 22 before rates spiked, and you'd expect to see values decline a bit. So I think that's kind of the typical conversation we have on each of these UPREITs with our committees.
And, you know, I mentioned the REIT has repriced since then too. And so, yeah, the other mitigant is, you know, at UPREIT, you're getting more units as well, right? You're dividing by a lower NAV, and so that helps to offset as well.
Okay. How about HSHID fund flows through November? Are you still seeing net inflows? Any comments you can provide for us on new sales versus redemptions over the last several months?
Let me pull that up. But you are right. Yes, we've continued to see strong positive net flows. So through November, year to date, we're at a little over 400 on the REIT, and redemptions are just under 220. And then on the DST, we're about 680. So net, we're 870 or so. And redemptions, they kind of continue to be around 30. Yeah, the average is about 35% of our monthly cap.
All right.
But the good thing is the REIT has started to increase. So when I look at the last 6 months on the REIT gross, it was 228. And then the 6 months before that was 200. So, you know, it is increasing. Obviously, still some room to grow, but we are, you know, across the board seeing advisors starting to reallocate more, you know, kind of understanding the story on real estate repricing and all that.
Okay. How about Atrex selling syndicate? Any notable updates since we last spoke with you? Obviously, this is a much larger deal. Is that going to allow you to add additional firms to the selling syndicate, or just continue to increase sales at current members? What's the kind of thinking about the Atrex selling syndicate right now?
No, I mean, we've definitely added some new groups. You know, nothing, I don't think anyone that's probably on your level as far as scale goes. Dana can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think it'll be a similar arrangement to Atrex 8 on kind of allocations and the syndicate.
And Dan, are you still kind of trending a third Wire's a third, IBD is a third, RIAs when it comes to Atrex, or have those numbers shifted around a little bit?
I have that. I think it's here. Get it. Atrex. The latest is, so it's 27, this is year to date, 27% wire, actually about 50% BD right now, and then 23% RIA. That does move around a little bit because, you know, when you're, I call it the shoulder season between offerings and, you know, RIAs can usually submit trades earlier than some of the BDs and all of that, but.
I think that's all I had. From a timing standpoint, I think we're going to try to take this to committee, next week, Thursday, so the 18th. And similar to what we've done the last couple deals, we'll ask for approval contingent upon review of the third-party report. So timing will largely depend on when SK gets the report over to us. Sam and team typically have gotten us launched a day or two after I've had that call with SK. So Dana, based on your note with Donica last week, it sounds like maybe early January for the SK report. I'll review it same day, try to set up a call with them as soon as they have availability, and then launch it a day or two after. So that what's driving our launch will largely be that SK report timing. Any questions for me on that?
Not really. But yeah, if you for me. Need anything from us, I mean, me and Danica here for any last-minute items for the RIC next week.
Yeah, we should be in good shape. I think as long as I get that marketing deck, I usually include that in the materials, so like the little brochure, which it looks like on the Intralinks site, you're still working through that, so assuming that's available on Monday as when I send committee materials over, we should. That's kind of the last piece I've got outstanding from you all, outside of the third-party report.
I'll let you know by
Monday. Sounds good.